Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hi, I'm Reese.
And I'm Troy.
You're listening to the second episode of The Unusual Suspects, Pop Culture and Whiskey, the podcast in which we talk about movies, games, comics, and all other things geek. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with some news. We're not going to go into all aspects of news. We're going to split up segments. So we're going to start talking about some movies because everybody loves movies. Who doesn't love movies? Who doesn't love movies? Because seriously, there's something wrong with you if you don't. All right, so let's cut into some movie news. Continuing on from last week's incredible amount of movie news about, you know, Star Wars 7, we got some Star Wars 7 related movie news in that the fact is Star Wars now has a writer, Michael Arndt, who is known to have written Little Miss Sunshine, for which he won the Oscar for, his first screenplay, and he wrote Toy Story 3, best adapted screenplay. Nominated, didn't win though. The actual Disney official statement: as pre-production of Star Wars Episode 7 begins, Lucasfilm has confirmed that the award-winning writer Michael Arndt will write the screenplay for the new Star Wars film. Okay, so just the 7th film, which is cool. We'll have a few screenwriters for the next ones, which will be interesting. As revealing in the ongoing video series posted here on StarWars.com, Kathleen Kennedy and George Lucas have begun story conferences with Arndt. Arndt won the Academy Award for etc., etc. So you can head by StarWars.com. There is a short video series. There's 2 episodes up so far of, I forget who it is, but talking with Kathleen Kennedy, the new CEO of Lucasfilm, and George Lucas about his kind of his role in the films currently and what they have been doing so far. So Michael Arndt.
It's an interesting choice, to say the least. I mean, being that he's not from a sci-fi background, it's going to be a bit of a...
Well, Toy Story is kind of sci-fi. I mean, toys that are alive.
It's... I've got nothing against it. I mean, it's... You've had people in roles that have never done that type of thing before.
And managed to smash it out.
Yeah, and managed to come up with things that...
Duncan Jones' Moon. One of the best sci-fi films in the past couple of years. Just... I think that was his first film. Yeah. And he just smashed it.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Arndt, Little Miss Sunshine, not really a Star Wars style movie, and Toy Story 3 more of a kids film, which Star Wars kind of a kids film. But they're both really well written. The last Toy Story film had that one moment at the end of the film when they were all about to die and they acknowledged it, which is one of the best writings I've seen in any kids film ever. I mean, that was such a powerful moment for just that. And Little Miss Sunshine has just ounces of charm and drama, which are two things that he could very well inject into a Star Wars film. Yeah. So it'll be interesting when we hear who the director is, because as good as a screenplay can be, a director can still fuck up a movie from there.
Yeah.
I mean, George Lucas not only fucked up the screenplay and the movie for a lot of the prequels. So I guess we'll see what happens there. More movie comic news. Lock and Key, the comic, has been confirmed as a movie. Now, Lock and Key is a comic written by Joe Hill, drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez. It's actually really cool. I've read it. It's been around since about 08. It is in a 3-act structure, each act composing of 1 and 2. So it still hasn't, the whole thing hasn't finished yet. It was made into a television series last year or the year before by Fox, who eventually passed on the pilot.
Even if they picked it up, it would have been cancelled.
That's a good point. Apparently from everyone at Comic-Con that did see the pilot, they were super bummed about it never coming to screen.
Was that this most recent Comic-Con or 2011?
No, it would have been 2011. Not the one you went to, Mr. Okay. I went to Comic-Con. It will be written by Roberto Orsi, I always get that wrong, and Alex Kurtzman, who have been known for the first 2 Transformers films, the Star Trek film. They're co-writing the second Star Trek film with Damon Lindelof. They co-created Fringe with J.J. Abrams. They've done the new Hawaii Five-O, and also they're working on a Van Helsing remake with Tom Cruise.
Oh.
Good and bad news all in one. I guess that's another bit of news which we'll come back to in a second.
That'd be interesting.
It was announced over Twitter. There were rumors flying around. Someone tweeted at Roberto Orsi saying, "Is it true? Is it true?" And he just said, "True." So this is cool news for comic book films, because Roberto Orsi and Alex Kurtzman have done great writing with television with the movies that they've been doing recently. So yeah, Look forward to more information about the Lock and Key film coming out. Van Helsing remake with Tom Cruise.
I've got nothing against Tom Cruise as an actor, really. I mean, you look at some of the stuff he's done. Mission Impossible is great.
Yeah.
He's had a few bit of left-wing films here and there, and in off-screen, he's batshit crazy. But, I mean, so is John Travolta, and look at his film career. So.
Oh, John Travolta. So good.
Van Helsing was done and done well. Like, well, we won't say well, but it was done. It was done.
One way or another, they made a film.
And, you know, I guess in this one, as long as they don't throw a werewolf at a wooden, you know, cart and it catches on fire for no apparent reason, then it could be better than the first.
Magic. It's magic.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
It's like flying horses.
Continue on to weird movies being announced and casting rumors. We've got a new Tarzan film in production at Warner Brothers by David Yates, who did the last four Harry Potter films, Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and Deathly Hallows Part 1 and Part 2. Which, I like David Yates, I liked his directing in those last couple of ones. I reckon Order of Phoenix was one of the best, a lot of people disagree with me. He's also in talks with a bunch of actors too, stars Tarzan. First up, we've got Henry Cavill, who was in Immortals and is currently shooting, starring in the upcoming Superman Man of Steel.
Is he Superman?
Yeah. Charlie Hunnam, who everyone would know from Sons of Anarchy, and anyone who doesn't, he was in this really, really cool Green Street Elite film 3 years ago, Soccer Hooligans, Elijah Wood.
Yes. I did see him. That was Green Street.
He's the English bloke.
That was Green Street Hooligans, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Sorry, Green Street Elite is the name of the hooligans.
Yes.
Well, there you go. I'm wrong for once.
Oh my god. That doesn't happen.
And they're also he's also talking.
We can edit that.
He's also talking with Alexander Skarsgård, who stars in True Blood at the moment, and he was also the main character's older brother in Battleship. So it's kind of interesting. Warner Brothers actually kind of want to get Tom Hardy in there on it. So Tom Hardy isn't in talks, but Warner Brothers want Tom Hardy as Tarzan. So for all you ladies out there that want to see Tom Hardy take off his shirt again, I mean, there's Warrior, there's Bane,
he's a machine.
God, he's in that film earlier. I can't remember it. The film by Nicholas Winding Refn.
Lawless?
Oh, no, really early. I can't remember what it was called.
I think he'd be shirtless.
My brother's going to punch me for this. He loves this movie and I still haven't watched it. Bronson. He spends half the shirt with no film on. half the shirt with no film on.
Yes.
A new Hercules movie is in production, starring one Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which, you know, that's the 50% of good news about this film, because Dwayne Johnson's enjoyable in everything he's in. I mean, he's going to be the...
He really is, though.
He's G.I. Joe 2 doesn't interest me at all, but Dwayne Johnson and Bruce Willis are in it, so it kind of interests me now.
I enjoyed the first G.I. Joe film.
As a terrible piece of crap, but fun.
I loved it. A fun piece of crap. No, it was great.
But the flip side of the new Hercules movies is being directed by Brett the Hack Ratner. That's his actual nickname, by the way. The Hack.
Wow.
He ruined the X-Men series. So.
Yeah. I'm still upset that they're not getting Kevin Sorbo back to be Hercules. He's still going to be in shape.
Yeah, he's not that old.
No.
He was in Slack recently.
Just like they could get, you know, Lucy Lawless back to do Xena.
Yeah, definitely. You know? I'd still watch a Lucy Lawless film, man. Who doesn't think she's...
She kind of looks like Rosie O'Donnell these days, but...
No, she was in that Spartacus recently.
Really?
Yeah, she's in that. Wow. I think she takes the top off too, so...
Oh, well, good on her.
The Need for Speed video game movie has a plot. Now, for one, it's starring Aaron Paul for Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad's an amazing piece of television. Aaron Paul's really good in that. Okay, so this is the plot. Aaron Paul is an underground racer who owns a garage. He's framed for his best friend's murder during a race and sent to prison. Cue the revenge movie. So,
but it's
not a really original plot.
Yeah, see, the thing with movies like that, you can get so many decent actors, you can get a decent director and throw it into a movie like that, and it can still turn to shit. It's going to be... It's going to be a cusp of...
Well, like, you know what?
Fast and the Furious,
As bad as I really... Some of those Fast and the Furious movies that I really do not like, I think they're boring. I love Tokyo Drift, and I absolutely love the Fast 5. I think that was one of the best action films of last year or the year before.
Yeah.
So I think it has the potential of being a really cool action film.
You really have to be a huge car person to get into.
Well, I don't. I'm not. The thing they managed to lose out of the Fast and the Furious series was, as they went on, it became less about the cars and more about the action.
Yeah.
Like the last one was a heist film when they were driving a bank vault down a street and taking out cars. I mean, that's just...
But the one prior to that, was that the Fast and Furious?
Yes, the...
Yeah, driving cars, like, underground tunnels, you know, through Mexico, and it just... Really yeah, dumb. It's kind of a horrible, horrible film.
But it, obviously, it has a... Dominic Cooper is going to play an ex-NASCAR driver who's using his connections to start a car model business. Dominic Cooper was in Captain America. I played Howard Stark. And for anyone who actually watched it, was in Abraham Lincoln. He was the mentor. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. Yes. He was the mentor in that. They're also trying to get Imogen Poots to play an exotic car dealer. The only thing I know her from is she is the girl from 28 Weeks Later. So
fair enough.
In more brain-dead action news, Transformers 4 is happening. And it's starring the one, the only, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. No, Marky Mark of the Funky Bunch.
As long as someone is standing behind Michael Bay that entire film, telling him to zoom out, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah. Considering the fact that every time Michael Bay has made a Transformers film, he said, he made the first one, he goes, all right, someone else can make the rest. It'll be interesting. And then he made two. He goes, you know what? I'm done. Then he made three. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to make a new movie with Mark Wahlberg. And now I'm going to make Transformers 4 with Mark Wahlberg.
Now, with Transformers 4, like, obviously, that's going to be pretty gung-ho for him. Like, he's all attention towards that at the moment. But what happened to the whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles remake?
Oh, yeah. I forgot he's working on that.
He announced that the Turtles are now aliens, and the internet exploded. And, you know, he got thousands of death threats and emails and, you know...
Michael,
he had fucking Bay. Well, he had rebuttals for the whole thing and wanted a fresh start and everything else, but has he given that away, or did the fanboys scare him off?
I think it's still in production. I mean, Transformers 4 probably isn't going to be like till 2015, 2016, so... And he's just finished up his current movie, A Pain and Gain, with Mark Wahlberg, that I know absolutely nothing about. But he's got to do something in the meantime, right? Yeah,
I guess
ruin Ninja Turtles and then come back and ruin Transformers some more.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
okay. A new Terminator film, which I guess is a little bit old news. Annapurna Pictures. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. It's a word. It says it there. Annapurna Pictures, who have made four movies so far: Killing Them Softly, The Masters, Lawless, and Zero Dark Thirty. All films that come out in this year and/or next year. Tweeted about the end of last month a John Connor quote along with the words, "News is coming." So they're obviously going to produce a new Terminator film, which I'm kind of excited about. I still really liked, what was the crappy last one?
Salvation. That wasn't crappy. That was brilliant. Kind of... That was the Christian Bale one.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah.
I liked...
I really, really did enjoy Salvation. I thought that was a brilliant film. The one prior to that, Terminator 3, the...
I've got to rewatch Terminator 3, but apparently that was still really good. I remember I watched it as a kid, so I can't remember if it is good or not. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was when they got Arnie back in and...
Yeah, when... yeah, but James Cameron pretty much told him, yeah, do it. He said, do it. But get as much money as you can while doing it.
Well, that was...
Because obviously James Cameron sold the rights to Terminator to direct Terminator 2.
That was a horrible mess of a movie. But Salvation redeemed the franchise. My huge
bummer with Salvation is that you never got to see that future war that he teases so well in Terminator 2. Like with the lasers and like the destructed cities. And then it kind
of... You got a little bit of military action at the start.
Yeah.
When they actually found...
It was a cool film. I liked it, but as a Terminator 4, really was looking for something else. Yeah. But, you know, Terminator 5, who knows? Maybe they reboot it and it's the Terminator.
Yeah, as long as they've got to somehow work towards an end. And I think as long as they don't bring Arnie back, I think they've overused Arnie in the Terminator side of things.
Yeah. He's doing his own action stuff at the moment, so The Last Stand. See how that goes.
Yeah.
We'll do a little bit of television news, which, not a whole lot of television news, that I could find anyways.
Major this week.
Neil Gaiman is announced to write another episode of Doctor Who, for those of you out there who love Doctor Who. He wrote the season five episode, I believe it was, The Doctor's Wife, which, in my opinion, one of the better episodes of Doctor Who. That one took him 3 years to write up. I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be during David Tennant's time. Wow. And then they pushed it, and then they pushed it, and then Matt Smith came along, and then it was supposed to be during the first season of Matt Smith's with only one companion, and then ended up through the next one. He had to get Stephen Moffat to help him write it at a point to kind of accommodate for Rory. But his episode, it's set for next year's season of Doctor Who. Obviously, the new companion will be in by then, or is in now. I haven't watched any of the season yet. It will be... Warwick Davis is in the episode, which will be really cool. Hour-long episode, so a bit longer than normal episodes, and it'll feature the Cybermen, which is a bit of a bummer. I'm not a personal fan of the Cybermen. I think they've been overused recently, but we'll see how we'll see what Neil Gaiman does with that. And a little bit of Arrow news. Ben Browder, who Troy has no idea who he is.
No.
Who's the main guy in Farscape, and he starred in the last two seasons of... Jesus, I did that wrong. I said Farscape or Stargate?
Farscape.
Okay, yeah, sorry. He's the main guy in Farscape, and he starred in the last two seasons of Stargate to replace Colonel Jack O'Neill. He's playing a character called Ted Gaynor, so I don't know anything about the Arrow comics. In the respect to the TV show, he served with Diggle in the military, and he's supposed to come in and kind of get between... Diggle and Queen, so there'll be some interesting things.
There's a lot of interesting stuff coming up in Arrow, actually.
Yeah, they've got they put out a picture of the Huntress.
Yes, which shall be I think it's either a 2 or 3 episode kind of little duck in there.
Yeah, I forget the actress that they had play, but they've already got John Barrowman guest starring on for Doctor Who fans. John Barrowman's awesome from Torchwood. He's Man in Black or the Man in the Suit or something. The nefarious, the one that keeps ordering the mother around.
Ah, yes. Fair enough.
So kind of the guy that's in a part of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
He's really cool. So
we've got a lot of DC crossovers coming up for the rest of the season as well. Yeah. And for Family Guy fans, which aired in the US only a few hours ago, actually, is the 200th episode of Family Guy.
No, you were talking about that.
Yeah, that's an hour special. I haven't had a chance to watch because obviously it's only just out. But looks pretty interesting from the trailer of it that I saw at Comic-Con. The basis of the episode is Brian screwed Stuart's time machine, and now it's sent time in reverse, so everything's going backwards. So they kind of travel back through a few iconic episodes, but everything in reverse. So, and from the trailers cool, I saw, it looks like it's going to be one of the funniest Family Guy's in a fair while.
Well, I haven't watched any Family Guy in a very long time. I mean, when they used to repeat it on Fox 8, but now I don't have cable, so I don't really watch it as much as I can. So that's our news for movies and television. So we're going to talk about a bit about movies and television. So we were going to talk about Cabin in the Woods, but unfortunately Troy hasn't seen it.
No. Hangovers.
I've seen it. But so we'll wait till next week until Troy's seen it, so we have a bit of information. But I'll put one word down, and Troy, I want you just to read that out.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Now, fuck. You can never tell whether that's a good fuck, a bad fuck.
That's in this case, it's a good fuck. It's just like, oh, fuck. I really like that film. I've still been trying to decide how much I like that film, okay. How much it leans into its references, how much it leans into its horror, how much it leans into its comedy. Yeah. But... We'll talk about it a bit more next week in detail when Troy's seen it, but...
My bad.
Really did do it. Also, I saw 7 Psychopaths. Troy did not.
Yeah, I wasn't invited.
Sorry about that. It was a birthday thing for me. A friend of mine shouted me the movie. So,
rude.
We'll also hold that over to... Rude. He paid for me. He's not paying for you. Pay for your own bum self. So we'll try to talk about 7 Psychopaths next week.
Yep.
I will quickly talk about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which I had a chance to watch. Have you seen that?
Nope.
No. Alright, first, did you watch any movies this week?
It's Brave.
Watch Brave?
I did watch
I've seen
Brave.
That. Let's talk about Brave then.
I enjoyed it.
You did?
I really did. I read some stuff online and people gave that movie a lot of flack.
They did, like...
And I can't see any problems with it.
I felt
the voice acting was perfect, the animation was perfect, the whole narrative, the story was really well done.
Scottish redheaded chicks, man.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing better than Scottish redheaded chicks. That's why you should watch Doctor Who.
Fair enough.
No, I did really enjoy it. The only thing I felt is that it looked more of an action film than it actually was.
Yeah, but it's still a
It's a, no, it was good. Pixar film. Yeah, it was really funny. Billy Connolly, of course, if you have a Scottish film, you have to get Billy Connolly. Yeah. kind of really interesting, really cool comedy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, not much you can say about it. I mean,
it's not Pixar's best work.
Obviously not.
It's not Pixar's worst work. Yeah. Cars, Cars 2.
No, but I mean, overall, for a Pixar film, it was enjoyable. It wasn't something that you'd walk out and be like, eh. Like, it was a decent film.
I went there and I saw it and I sat through it and, like, it was really good.
Yeah.
The anime, like, always, Pixar kick. Yeah.
I mean, it's not your Incredibles, it's not your Monsters, Inc., but...
Oh, Incredibles, man.
Such a good movie.
I watched that recently. So, Brave, if you haven't seen it by now, which has already left the theaters last year...
You're supposed to be watching horror films and watching decent, you know, stuff to
like
review.
Normal
and,
movies, yeah.
Like I get something hungover that's recent. And sit in bed eating sandwiches and watching children's movies.
So, hopefully we'll have Cabin in the Woods and...
I promise.
Seven Psychopaths to talk about next week. So The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I did watch. Anything David Fincher, I absolutely love. I mean, The Social Network, a film about a guy that creates Facebook, one of the best films of the last year. Music wise, one of the best soundtracks of last year.
Trent Reznor, of course.
He works again with Trent Reznor. Did he work with Atticus Finch?
Yes.
On this one or on Social Network?
Both.
Okay, cool. So Trent Reznor and Atticus Finch was back. They actually do nod to Nine Inch Nails. One of the characters wears a huge ninja.
Oh, sweet.
The soundtrack is amazing. I mean, even the soundtrack alone, I would recommend this film for. It's a really long film. I kind of sat down to watch it. I was like, all right, cool. I'll watch this and then I'll do some stuff afterwards. And 2.5 hours later, the film is still going. It doesn't overstay its welcome at all, though. That running time is... I was pretty much into it the entire time.
But film-wise, did you see the... what was it? Was it Russian? The Russian film that was...
Oh, it's
like cause
Swedish,
they've done,
Norwegian, something.
Yeah,
because
they've done, yeah, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. They've released the three book, three movies.
No, I was going to because a friend of mine said they were really good and I really did want to see it. Yeah. But then when I heard David Fincher was remaking it, with foreign films being remade, I watch a lot of foreign films, so I see them a lot before they're remade. Infernal Affairs, which was eventually remade into The Departed with Leonardo DiCaprio. Both of them are great films. Infernal Affairs, I would recommend over Departed.
Yeah.
There's bits near the end that are so much better in Infernal Affairs. But I went to The Departed. I enjoyed the hell out of it. But I knew everything that was going to happen. There's some twists in there. And you're kind of like... My friends were like, whoa, did you see that coming? It's like, yeah. Yeah, I did. I've kind of already seen it. Yeah. So I didn't want to spoil the David Fincher version for myself. Yeah. I will go back and watch the... Norwegian, I believe it is. Yeah. I don't want to get
it's
that
It's a
wrong.
European country.
It's one of them that doesn't speak English. I did want to go back and watch that and compare it. But Daniel Craig is much cooler with a beard, I will say. Daniel Craig smashes the hell out of that role. Investigative journalism, it's really slow. It's really methodical. It kind of takes its paces. It's really messed up in respect to really everything that kind of happens in that. There's... The scenes that are gory are really gory. The kind of... The original... I believe the original name translated of the book is Men Who Hate Women.
Seriously?
And that comes across. There is... I will... If you have to watch this film with your parents, don't. There is a really kind of full-on rape scene.
Oh,
there
awkward.
There is a crap ton of nudity. I did hear about a bit of this through reviews of the original. Yeah. And I really did not see it coming. And Rooney Mara spends half of that film naked. I mean, she's a good sport. She's really good in it.
At least that'll make me watch it.
Yeah, there's enough nudity in there for you.
Fair enough.
It's good. Acting, directing, writing. If you have a spare 3 hours to spare to watch it, I don't think it's quite that long, but it's along the lines of that. I don't know if David Fincher is coming back for the next two, for The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest and The Girl Who Played with Fire, I believe it is.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to mix it up with The Hunger
Games. Yeah.
Catching Fire is The Hunger Games. Yeah. The Girl Who Played with Fire and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. So I don't know if David Fincher will be back, but I hope he does, man. Anything David Fincher, immediately recommendable. Soundtrack is amazing.
Sweet.
So we'll move on to some television, since we don't really have many more films to talk about. We'll quickly talk about a little bit more Arrow. sixth episode was out since last week.
Yep.
Which you hadn't seen, I had.
Yes.
It's good.
Really good.
Two more episodes came out.
Two, actually, yeah. Yep. 5 and 6. I hadn't seen 5 last week, and now I have seen 5 and 6. It's good. It really takes the show in a decent direction. Like, it's obviously taken it a little bit to build up the character of Oliver Queen, build up all the people around him, support cast and everything like that, but it covered some unanswered questions. It sort of covered plot holes that people were scratching their head and asking questions about, so it really did fill in the gaps. So
yeah,
I don't want to give too much away, but
no. I'm just gonna say that the island stuff, I just want to see more island stuff. That stuff is for me anyways, as good as the show is, that stuff's the most interesting, and I like seeing kind of what develops.
And I'm becoming a huge fan of Stephen Amell, the guy who actually plays so Oliver Queen. He's popped up out of nowhere, and
he's
a brilliant actor.
Did he play Green Hornet? Did he play the Green Arrow in the Smallville TV show?
No.
Okay.
No.
I was just wondering.
But yeah, he's... Yeah.
So watch it, basically. You heard our glowing review last week, so yes. We're just continuing the just watch it.
Do it.
Okay, so our television show of this week is Elementary. Now, Elementary is an American version of a modern version of... Well, version. It's
a present-day version of Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. So for those of you out there, there is the Stephen Moffat McGaddis version of Sherlock, which is... I can't recommend that enough. It's an amazing piece of television. With Benedict Cumberbatch playing Sherlock is amazing. I can't remember who's playing John Watson. He's playing the Hobbit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, we should know this.
Yes, I know. I can't remember his name. It's John Freeman. Martin Freeman. Martin Freeman plays John Watson. So, you know what? You should check that series out. Obviously, CBS asked them if they could remake their version of Sherlock as an American show, and Stephen Moffat pretty much said no. Americans can't remake British shows, which is true.
Which we've seen time and time again.
The first episode is a carbon copy, and it doesn't work as well with American accents as it does with British actors.
But the fact, I still like that they've kept Sherlock in the American version British. That was my biggest worry going into it. Being an American show, they usually take everything British out of it and Americanize it, whereas they've kept him as a British Sherlock.
So they've got Johnny Lee Miller playing a British Sherlock. They do answer it like, okay, he's in New York at the moment. He was in London right up until New York. The biggest change is Watson is now played by Lucy Liu, so Watson is a female.
Yeah. Still a doctor.
Yeah.
Sherlock's recovering drug addict.
Which is their like little interesting twist, because they have this kind of continuing thread in the background of what happened to him. What was this thing that happened to him? Because it looks like it affected him.
In a big way. But, I mean, the way the show's been built, it's very much a crime drama.
It is, because you've got... It's 22 episodes. It was full season from 13. And each episode is a different crime he has to deal with. Which, for me, I was wondering how a 22-episode or a 13-episode American series would work. Is because the English series, each episode is an adaptation of the book. Is a modern version of the book. So, and since, even though Sherlock Holmes is in royalty-free character status, since it's a modern version of Sherlock, they can't redo the books because they'd be copying the English show.
Yeah.
So, wondering how they would do a 40-minute episode 22 times... So far, 6 episodes are out so far. I've only seen 5. You've seen 6 this time.
The 6th is good in the way that it starts to break open Sherlock's character a little bit more. It starts to reveal a bit of the backstory and, I don't know, kind of show a bit of his humanity.
I will admit, at least this Sherlock Holmes is more accommodating to other people. In the British series... Sherlock's pretty much like, you know what, I like John Watson, and I like, I can't remember the caretaker of the house, but he's pretty much fuck everybody else. You guys are too dumb for me, I don't care for you, pretty much how he deals with everyone else. In this, he's obviously, the reason he's working with the police is because he's working with a Captain Tobias Gregson, who's played by Aidan Quinn. I can't honestly tell you anything that Aidan Quinn's in, but he's really good as the captain, who... in the backstory, things worked with Sherlock when he was still in Britain, learning about terrorism and all that kind of stuff. They have this really kind of cool relationship. Then the detective that also works with him, Detective Marcus Bell, played by John Michael Hill, again, can't say anything that he's in,
no.
Who replaced the guy from the very first episode,
yeah,
which happens with a lot of shows.
Pilot.
Yeah, pilots, yep. They usually lose an actor. It's really good. Dizzy, he works with the police without trying to just be like, you know what, I know everything, you guys are idiots.
Yeah.
For me, anyways, is it the third or the fourth episode with the missing kids?
Ah, I think that was four. Yeah, four. Episode four.
So far, four is super interesting.
Extremely.
Because one of the great things about Sherlock is that he has a nemesis, Moriarty, who's this king of crime, as Sherlock is king of stopping crime.
Yeah.
And he has this really good thing. With the new series, they haven't really introduced anyone yet to be a Moriarty.
Yeah.
But they do have a really interesting character in that episode that he kind of faces off against.
Yeah.
Which is one of those, wait, someone may have stumped Sherlock. It's good. For me, it's not as good as the original, because the original...
Of course. But I mean, if you're a fan of anything Sherlock Holmes, really, it's definitely worth a look. I mean, even...
Johnny Lee Miller's really good in it. Lucy Liu's pretty good in it. I haven't seen her in anything in a while. The cases that they come up with are not super deep, but are more or less interesting. It is very similar to The Mentalist in the way I've seen it. I even just... the Panic Room the Panic Room little bit is actually straight from The Mentalist. It's an episode where he figures out there's a panic room and how to open it when no one else does, and there's a person inside.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Other than that, it looks like, hopefully, I'm hoping that the more it goes on, the more the show builds up its originality, its own identity, so that you've got, okay, The Mentalist and this Elementary are both about a person who uses deductive reasoning, logic, and just notice things. But they're both separate shows, because The Mentalist is destroying in ratings, as it has been for the last three seasons. Well, not destroying in ratings, but it's rating really well. So
just really much attention to detail.
Yeah, it's really good. Check it out. Check it out.
One of Lucy Liu's surprisingly best roles in the past 5 years, because she hasn't really been doing much.
I can honestly...
I mean, she's got a few big movie roles coming up here and there.
Yeah. Last thing I can really remember from anyways was Kill Bill, and that was actually quite a while ago. But she's probably been in stuff since then.
And she was in one of the trailers we mentioned last week. Was that Iron Fist?
Oh, right. She was in that, yes.
So
that'll be cool. So
she'll have a few things coming up, but she does really well in this.
Which is really cool. That's pretty much all we got at the moment for movies and television. So let's move on to some video game related stuff. So wait, no, I forgot. I'm gonna backpedal for a second there. Like we said last week, you talked about trailers. So the trailer park segment,
trailer park. It's a good name.
We're a bit all over the place, because the way I've got over all the information in front of me, it's just all over the place for the moment. So trailer park, where we talk about trailers for the upcoming movies. A kind of big week in trailers, while not being a big week. Hasn't been too many new trailers, but a lot of big trailers.
Yeah.
So we'll wait. The big trailer we're hinting at, we'll talk at last, because we can use that as a juxtaposition to another trailer that came out.
Yep.
First, we'll talk about John Dies at the End. Now, John Dies at the End is another film by the director of Phantasm and Bubba Hotep.
Yes.
Which Bubba Hotep, if you haven't seen, you should go see. Bruce Willis.
Yeah, for those, I guess, who haven't heard or seen it. Bruce Campbell
playing Elvis, fighting a ass-sucking vampire.
And he's in a mental institution or old people's home?
No, it's an old people's home.
That's right. And a black man in the old people's home who believes he's JFK. Jesus reincarnated.
No, JFK.
JFK, that's right, sorry. And yeah, it's a Bruce Campbell film. I mean, if you love Evil Dead, if you love anything Bruce Campbell's in, then...
Now, John dies at the end. I can honestly not tell you what the fuck is going on in that trailer.
I don't know how to describe it. It's like, you remember that movie Go?
I remember it. I didn't watch it.
It's like a, I don't know.
It looks like a drug trip movie.
Yeah, it looks like a drug trip movie. It looks like it could be a Hunter S. Thompson-ish
style. They do mention the source that they're on,
yeah,
which transforms into a beetle and flies into his own mouth.
I guess you have to watch the trailer.
We'll post it up on the Facebook page, but check it out. It's really, really interesting looking, really kind of funny looking.
But it does look like an amazing film.
It does. It looks like it one to watch.
Yeah.
Because there has been a bunch of trailers that come out. There was a trailer that I saw the other day, I can't remember, that looks like the film is either going to be great or absolute shit. Hansel and Gretel.
Which we mentioned last week. Yeah.
Which is either going to be awesome or shit.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the films of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, John Doe's at the end. Yeah. Looks really cool. Could be really cool.
Check it out.
Silent Night. Silent Night is a horror film, Christmas-themed horror film.
Yeah, when I heard about it and I got sent the trailer, I thought, really, like, Silent Night, I was thinking, yeah, shitty Christmas film, like, we've had enough of those over the past years.
I was, when I saw it and I started, before I even started watching it. I'm
just glad Tim Allen's not in it.
I was thinking, do you remember the fake trailers from Grindhouse?
Yes.
Do you remember the terrible Eli Roth fake trailer for Thanksgiving? That's what I was thinking.
But, it looks great. I mean,
it looks pretty awesome.
In a way, I'm surprised this hasn't happened in real life. Someone dressed as Santa Claus
go around killing lost people their shit
and decided to kill people in Christmas.
Well, yeah, it was a movie. It was that Arnold Schwarzenegger film, Jingle All the Way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's got. Oh God, I forgot who's got in it. It's got actors in it. Shit, I forget all of them. I don't have the information in front of me. I forgot all the actors. It looks really cool. It looks less of an action film than it does of more of it looks less of a horror film, more kind of leans into action. It still kind of has the stupid over the top horror.
No, but the thing is, that was what impressed me about it being a Christmas film. It doesn't look corny. Like, it doesn't look like a corny, dumb Christmas horror film, like something they've just thrown together to, you know.
Yeah, no, it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, it does actually look like it could be a decent film.
Which I've been craving really good horror lately. I've been buying a whole bunch of horror comics and reading them. I bought a horror card game. Well, I pledged to a horror game Kickstarter that I want on. So any good horror I can get would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, so in horror-related zombie news, two trailers came out this week. Okay. I've got to stop saying that. I apologize. So, first of all, World War Z. Now, Troy, give us the background on this.
Max Brooks' book. Max Brooks was the writer for Zombie Survival Guide. I'm pretty sure everyone's either seen it on a shelf. Some of you have probably read it. It's the definitive
Zombie Survival Guide. If anyone ever asked me what weapon to use, I always say a crowbar now.
And anyone who's in comics, movies, TV, any industry like that, who's worked on zombie films, comics, movies, whatever else, has read that book. Like, it's the staple.
It's written in such a way that's taken seriously,
yeah,
but in a fun way.
And, yeah, Max Brooks, who wrote that, is the writer for World War Z, the book, which... The basis of the book is post-apocalyptic zombie outbreak and journalists going around interviewing different countries and from the perspective of the journalist and how each country dealt with the outbreak, etc., etc.
Kind of interesting. So you get all these different tales of zombie survival and this central kind of plot thread.
Yeah, but without having a central character so much, like he's not what the book's really based around. It's more about the trials and tribulations of all the countries and how they their capacity to deal with such a thing.
The other thing is Max Brooks sets up a specific set of rules within the Zombie Survival Guide that he carries over to his books, which is that zombies pretty much follow the classic zombie horror. Is they walk, they're dumb, they can't see very well, but they can hear and smell very well. So classic zombies.
Yeah, none of this these days futuristic running, being able to hold guns,
nothing from the Dawn of the Dead remake with running zombies, none of Resident Evil fucking movies,
nothing from Zombieland. It's like old school classic 1960s zombie, pretty much.
Okay, so from the trailer, what this is the few things that we get from the trailer. One, zombies are like ants. and that they fall over each other to build anthill style things.
Pretty much, yeah, like zombies, they crowds of zombies in zombie films have been, you know, yeah. You've seen crowds of zombies. These are...
Imagine if you had like more of a 1,000 small toys and then you just pushed them all down at once and they kind of just combined and fell on top of each other.
My view was it looked like a music festival. The mosh pit of a music festival, but instead of people, they were zombies. Like that many people crushed into a small space, and that's what they've done. They've gone over the top with it. And
also, it's an egregious use of fucking CGI. I mean, I saw one non-CGI zombie in the trailer.
Yeah.
The rest of them were terrible. Like, they obviously use Massive, which is the program that the Lord of the Rings use, and a lot of use for crowd control, which it just looks so fucking stupid. I mean...
But I mean, I guess Brad Pitt is the main protagonist in the film.
From what I can tell is, for one, it doesn't take place after. It takes place during.
Yeah, see, my main issue with this whole trailer, you've got to sit down and watch it. And I mean, it was the same issue I had with War of the Worlds, they have a family. Like, it's Brad Pitt and his family. Like, War of the Worlds, it was Tom Cruise and his family. And in situations like this, it shouldn't be family-based, and it should be that lone character and what his story entails, not him protecting his family. Or, you know, they try to throw that in there for the humanity side of things and emotion and stuff in a movie. But for a zombie film, having groups of people together looking out for each other fucks it.
Yeah.
Zombie survival is, you know, all it's you against the world.
Yeah, the other thing is, while watching the trailer, pretty much, for some reason, so Brad Pitt gets saved really early on in the trailer. They take him to a airship carrier.
And what is it? UN consultant.
Yeah, that's, and right. then it's like, okay, I need you to go back out into the world and help us. And they don't say why, and then suddenly Brad Pitt is the most important man on Earth, and then he's being chased by zombies falling over each other continuously.
I.e. 2012.
Yeah, and it's it doesn't really... For one, we know it's got nothing to do with the books. I looked up the plot of the movie, and he's going around looking for a cure or some shit. The other thing is this. So these are a few things I've learnt since the trailer's come out. One is, I do know that Max Brooks originally did do a... this stuff I knew before is Max Brooks originally did do a screenplay, but he didn't have enough confidence in himself to be a good screenplay. Michael J. Straczynski came along and did a screenplay, which Max Brooks read and said was amazing. He said it's going to be such an awesome film when it does come out. The studio hired someone else to do a completely new screenplay without using Michael J. Straczynski's screenplay. So something using the ideas in the book, but not using the book. Which then they hired Damon Lindelof to come in and finish off the ending of the screenplay. And Damon Lindelof took one read and said, "This, I can't fix this in days, man. You need to give me months to fix this." So Damon Lindelof was dropped out. Drew Goddard, who co-wrote Cabin in the Woods, apparently came in and did a rewrite. So this script itself has had so much issues by the sound of it. The other thing I learned is that apparently on set, the animosity between the director, Mark Forster, who last did Quantum of Solace, and Brad Pitt got to such a point that Mark Forster was handing notes to someone to hand to Brad Pitt.
Wow.
They went on talking terms.
Primary school, that's... Fantastic.
Apparently they wanted to, the studio wants to reshoot some scenes after
See, that's the problem with the movies industry now. I mean, look at G.I. Joe, like we were talking about earlier. That was supposed to be released 3 weeks before release. They pulled the film to add it to 3D.
So first of all, sorry, it was supposed to be released June of this year.
Yes.
Yes.
And they pull it to add 3D.
Because they had a what's it called when they show off the movies to groups of people to try to gauge the...
Yeah, like a...
A preview screening, basically. They get people in, so they hear the grievances. Like, okay, cool. Do we re-edit this? What do we do? Yeah. They came back, and apparently... This is apparently, which I want to call bullshit on so hard. An entire studio of people came out of G.I. Joe and said, "You know what? There is not enough Channing Tatum, and the film was not in 3D." And that was what made them unhappy. So the studio was
and
like...
And that's bullshit.
Shit.
That is bullshit.
We have to go reshoot...
It's money. It's money Channing these Tatum. Days. It's, no one cares about... Like, a lot of studios really don't give a shit about content anymore. It's more, what are people going to throw money at us to see? Instead of, what do people want to enjoy? And so, hence, what the problem is going to be with World War Z.
Okay, now, so the World War Z trailer, it looks like an absolute piece of crap, which is unfortunate because I really do like Brad Pitt. Like, lately...
I really do. He's
everything
fantastic.
He's been in has been an absolute...
Chanel ad.
Yes. As stupid as that is, I enjoyed it because Brad Pitt was in it.
Yeah.
Killing Them Softly.
I kind of want to buy Chanel. I don't have the money. I'll save up for a year, but...
Moneyball in my... Was Moneyball last year or the year before?
Year before.
Moneyball was one of the best films of the year.
Yeah.
But, so, World War Z, check it out. It looks like an absolute piece
trailer
of crap.
Trailer will be on the page. Give us a few comments. Tell us what you think. But, I mean, yeah, we're both on the down.
Now, on the flip side of World War Z, another trailer dropped about a day or day two after called Warm Bodies.
I am so impressed with this trailer.
This
really looks like a fun film.
Funny, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
It's from the director of 50-50, which was that film where Joseph Gordon-Levitt has cancer. Which was a really great film, in case anyone didn't see it. It kind of surprised me out of hell. I was like, okay, this could be all right. This could be funny. It was really kind of touching and really good.
Yeah, it was. And, going off topic a little bit, but 50-50, when I first was going to see it, all I could think of was that movie with Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen?
Funny People.
Funny People.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was going to go along the lines of the whole... desperate trying to be funny thing, and Funny People didn't work at all. I thought that was
I really like Funny People. That's another thing for another time, but 50-50 really worked.
50-50 worked. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a really, really brilliant film.
Okay, so Warm Bodies is about, it's a zombie apocalypse film about a zombie. So from the beginning of the trailer, he's kind of narrating everything, a little bit of comedy here and there, and then I'll go from the trailer because my brother's told me a bit about the book. But from the trailer, he sees a girl and it kickstarts his heart. And suddenly he starts becoming more and more human. And it looks kind of like this tale of what makes us human, what makes us a monster. But it looks really original, really kind of interesting. And on the flip side of World War Z, it looks really good. Apparently it's a book. My brother said it's a really good book that you should definitely read. So I guess check out the book. But out of trailers this week... John Dies at the End is probably the best trailer we saw. For me, John Dies at the End is probably the best.
For me, it's Warm Bodies.
Warm Bodies is a close second.
Because, I mean, with the amount of zombie everything these days...
The oversaturation of zombies.
The oversaturation of zombies in the past 2 to 3 years is getting ridiculous, and Warm Bodies seems like finally a fresh take on the zombie aspect, so...
Now, I just want to quickly ask you, have you seen the trailer for Gangster Squad?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen the new trailer for Gangster Squad?
No, I saw the one pre-Colorado.
Okay, yeah. So there's a new trailer out. We'll talk about it, definitely talk about it next week, because I watched that trailer before I saw a movie this week. It was on the trailer at the beginning, and I have to say that if I could only watch one more film out of everything that's coming out, I'd have to say Gangster Squad.
Yeah.
So we'll give a little bit of talk about that next week. But so those are the trailers for this week. John Dies at the End, Silent Night, World War Z, and Warm Bodies. So a few there that you should check out. One
They'll
you should check
on
out
page.
And not like. All right, so we will now actually move on to some video game news, video game talk. So there's actually a really big news story this week. So in not so big news, Game Informer digital copy came out. Grand Theft Auto 5 to have 3 protagonists. I haven't read the story because I'm waiting for my physical copy of Game Informer to come in mail. Tree's not a big Rockstar fan.
I guess not so much Rockstar as it is Grand Theft Auto.
Okay.
Rockstar have done some good things over the years, but Grand Theft Auto for me got stale after San Andreas. I mean, even with San Andreas, it's kind of... The story repeats itself. It really does. You've got a main character that's an ex-con that comes back and hangs around with the same people that they were with before they went to jail, but tries to become a better person and ends up killing everyone in town to become a better person. And I mean, that's been, you know, no matter what nationality, no matter what color they are, it's the exact same thing in a different aspect with different accents and different towns. So, to me, it feels like a recycled story. The only one that I really, really, really enjoyed, I think, was Vice City.
Vice City is the best Grand Theft Auto by far. It had the most style. It had the most references. I mean, it lent so hard into the 80s.
And that's the thing. I'm the biggest 80s fanboy in the world. So, anything 80s, I'm attracted to. But it's,
So, that information's out there on the internet. So, read it out. I might talk about it next week after I read the magazine. So, I know pretty much the information. There's actually a new trailer that will come out on the 14th, which is 2 days from now.
Yeah.
So that trailer is probably be one of the biggest news stories, game news stories of this week.
Yeah.
The official PlayStation magazine, or PlayStation official magazine, whichever, or is shutting down. Holiday 2012 of this year will be the last one.
Got a lot of magazine shutdowns.
Yeah, there's
what was our most recent? Was it Nintendo
Power? Nintendo Power's last issue is next month, and that's shutting down.
But there was another one very recently. IGN did a tribute to it.
I'm not sure.
I don't know whether it was official Nintendo or something along those lines.
There is a lot that's being shut down. I know there's a PC one that was shut down recently as well.
But I guess magazines for gaming related stuff are going the way of
internet
CD stores, pretty much.
Yeah, so they're pretty much, they're leaving. Like, Game Informer is still the top magazine. The thing is
that magazines getting digitized.
Selling magazines for $15 is a bit, you're asking a bit much these days for people that can just access this information free on the internet.
Yeah, and the things that come in the magazines by the time they're gone to print and everything's out is 3 weeks old, and you've got more information than what they've provided in there anyway.
I think that's why Game Informer has managed to take the corner of the market. For one, they're $5 for a magazine. It's really cheap. Also, they get exclusive stories that, like, years ago that used to be the thing. It's okay, come over to this magazine because we've got the exclusive story about this game. Yeah. Game Informer just get exclusive stories about everything. Like, putting your game on the cover of Game Informer, like a la this month's Grand Theft Auto 5, is big news.
Yeah.
And, like, Gears of War cover issue for Game Informer was big news when that came out, so Game Informer is pretty much cornering the market on magazines.
Exclusives are keeping them alive, pretty much.
Yeah, anything else is going by the way of just, they're just being shut down. Some information on the PlayStation official magazine is it has circulated 139,000 copies to an audience of 956,320 people, which is a huge audience. I know those numbers don't match up.
Yeah,
but
not at all. Wow.
But that's the numbers I have in front of me, so
4,000 people to a magazine, but it'll work.
Yeah, so if you want to
share your magazines around people.
Apparently. Okay, so
share the love.
The continuing taking of shit by Silicon Knights is this week's biggest.
It's big game news. Game. That was a huge shock for me. That really was.
So,
I guess for those who don't know, it was Epic and Silicon Knights.
A few years ago.
Suing, counter-suing.
Yeah, a bunch of suits, so In the old bunch of news, Silicon Knights sued Epic over their inability to help them with the Unreal Engine that they've licensed.
From the documents I read with that original lawsuit, it was they had a game in production at the time that the Unreal Engine was promised to Silicon Knights.
It was Too Human, I believe.
Yeah, for use, and it was delayed.
They
turned around and said, look, we're tweaking the engine, we're doing this, we're doing that, we'll give it to you when it's ready because we don't want to give you...
It was originally, Too Human was originally a GameCube exclusive, which was delayed to the Wii, which was then ported over to the Xbox. So, which we don't know much about the development of Too Human, so for all we know, there could have been issues in development that they used excuses for the Unreal Engine. But anyways, they sued them and they lost. And the thing was, during the loss, the judge deemed that if Silicon Knights ever does win an appeal, it can only ever be awarded $1 per game. So if they won another suit, they would have won $1 for Too Human, because apparently Silicon Knights were asking for all of the profits of God of War, pretty much. So they went a little bit over, and then they got screwed. Then Epic countersued, and they lost the countersuit and were awarded $4.45 million in damages.
And I mean, the whole reason Silicon Knights wanted the whole money from God of War was because, from the looks of it, Epic pushed Silicon Knights back so they could give the Unreal Engine to the God of War developers and get that rushed out.
Yeah, the God of War developers.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I mean,
yes,
push
so they
that
could,
out
yeah, so they
prior
could get
to
it out before anything else on the Unreal Engine. But then again, we don't know all this.
But I mean, that's, you know, the reason they believe that they deserve the God of War profits is because they believe those would have been profits that
they
would
have
had if they had the engine prior to.
So that was the bad news. It gets worse. So during the loss, a judge also ruled that Silicon Knights must now pay Epic an additional $278,000 in court costs, $2.9 million in attorney fees, and $2.3 million in pre-judgment interest, adding to the $4.45 million, that's over $9 million. At the moment, Silicon Knights is a five-man team. Most of the staff has been fired over this because they just... Their last game, X-Men Destiny, a terrible game, did atrociously. They had no money. They fired most of their staff. So now, down to five staff member, oh, epic, $9 million. But that's not the worst of it.
It gets worse and worse and worse.
So now Silicon Knights has been ordered to recall and destroy all unsold copies of its game built on the Unreal Engine 3. Because what happened is when Silicon Knights started to sue Epic, they stopped paying them for the rights to use the Unreal Engine because they believed that since they had to modify the engine so much to use it, it's no longer theirs. It's now Silicon Knights' engine. But a judge has ruled that since it still uses the base of the engine, is still built upon the Unreal Engine, they are licensing the engine without paying for the license.
Yep.
So they've been ordered to recall and destroy all unsold copies built upon this engine, which, according to... which is pretty much... sorry.
And this was... I mean, the list of these games was in the legal documents, so...
Yeah, so for one, Two Human and their current game, X-Men Destiny... and then a bunch of games that haven't been released or have been talked about. The Box or Ritualist, which was in production with Sega, which I believe Sega cancelled.
Yeah.
The Sandman and Siren in the Maelstrom. Two games that I haven't heard anything about.
No, so. They were, production. Pretty much hinted at being in production.
Which they have up until December this year.
December 21st.
To destroy all copies. Under their own cost as well. So they have to pay to recall all of these games. They also...
Which is going to... I mean, that's going to cost millions and millions of dollars to...
Because they have to pay back those games anyways to the... Because to the...
They have to pay the retailers. They're going to have to pay for all the costs to get them shipped back to them and then pay for the cost to get them destroyed.
So...
And that's got to be reported to the courts and to Epic by first... Reporting date is December 21st this year, and then sometime mid-February, and pretty much the first reporting date is like, okay, this is what we've done to get all our stuff, back to us so we can destroy it, and by February, it's like everything should be done and dusted, and if not, then there's just going to be another shitstorm for Silicon Knights.
So the second worst destroying of video games in video game history, the first was a landfill filled with ET copies.
Yes.
And now,
which now ET is worth a lot of money.
Yeah, so maybe your copies of your unopened copies of Two Human and X-Men Destiny, which if you really wanted to go out and get them, I believe Amazon has copies for $4 or $5.
Two Human's a good game.
There is a reason they're cheap at the moment, and that's not because.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Might be a bit of video game history. So
who knows what will happen to Silicon Knights now? It's Silicon Knights have just gone from bad to worse.
And see, the thing is, reading up on a lot of stuff from Silicon Knights, I've been a fan since back in the GameCube days when they did Eternal Darkness. They have been funded by the Canadian government on several occasions. Just recently, 6 months ago, when all this stuff was really kicking in, the Canadian government gave them over $3 million.
Okay, so
they've pretty much been funded by the Canadian government to keep going. Dennis Dyack's won a lot of national awards in Canada for their advancement in games and whatever else, so this could look to go the way of 38, where Dennis Dyack ends up owing
more money than he has. That's right,
ends up owing the federal government of Canada money rather than
just Epic,
which for those who don't know about 38, who went under, now owe the state of Rhode Island.
But they're being sued by the state of Rhode Island. It's a story which you can pretty much Google it and find all the information, they're on the hook mess. For a lot of money.
Yeah, because guess same thing happened. The
state said Rhode Island lent them $75 million,
and because they applied for bankruptcy, they couldn't afford to pay back the money, so the state of Rhode Island had to.
They sold off all their assets, stole off all their stock, and they're now suing them.
Yeah, but also because Rhode Island had to cover the cost. Of the payback, that meant the taxpayers of Rhode Island had to pay cover back,
the 75 that they hadn't spent.
I'd be leaving the country if I
So there's actually a really good story up on Kotaku at the moment about Silicon Knights and the development of X-Men Destiny, which, from the sound of it, working at Silicon Knights during the development of X-Men Destiny was a horror unto itself. I'll post the story up on the Facebook page. It is a really interesting read, considering that Eternal Darkness, really great game, Twin Snakes, really great game.
Fantastic remake.
Too Human, great ideas, not great execution. X-Men Destiny, absolute piece of crap.
Yeah,
so
for it's been a downfall.
Yeah, so that sucks for Silicon Knights, but that's the news of this week, pretty much.
Yeah.
So we talked at length last week pretty much about Assassin's Creed, so we're going to keep it to a bare minimum.
Yes, we'll...
If we can.
In and out as much as we can.
So I'm just going to quickly tell you about my final thoughts. Overall, you know what? It's an okay game, but it's an okay game.
Both of us have played Assassin's Creed since the first. We've played pretty much all.
You miss Revelations,
obviously, and
all the PSP games.
Yeah, random handheld ones, but I mean, storyline wise, we're pretty versed on the whole, the feel of the games, how the storyline is, everything else.
I did like Connor's story. I liked how it resolved. There is a final little piece of his story which is really good to play, which is optional. Troy missed that. I
missed a very, yeah, obviously, as by it's, what it is, it's quite an emotional, quite...
It's a really important point to the story, which I find really weird for it to be optional.
Yeah, it's... I can't even believe I missed it. It got to the point towards the end of the game where I was getting so frustrated with it, I streamlined as much as I could to get it over and done with, but...
So I'm just gonna...
Homestead missions, people, for those of you who...
Yeah.
You know, want to see all the content that you need to see, do all the Homestead missions, make sure you keep an eye out for them, because you will get a lot of important storyline stuff from those missions.
So, a few of the things I didn't like about the game. For one, it has terrible tutorials. A lot of the tutorials...
Non-existent?
Yeah, a lot of them are non-existent. A lot of them kind of don't really tell you what you're doing. One of the worst ones is the convoy one. It kind of tells you, hey, you got this convoy system... then your convoy gets attacked and then suddenly disappears and you don't know what to do.
My biggest issue with tutorial wise was fighting. I didn't know how to counter properly until the 10th chapter. I was countering, like, obviously you get your little thing above the head to counter the attacks, but when I countered, all he did was grab them by the arm and throw him behind him. And then you go to the next person.
Some of the higher up enemies,
you had to knock away
their weapon and
protect them. But for regular enemies, that's all I did. So I was standing there just throwing people behind me. Like, people would run at me, okay, you go that way, you go that way.
That sounds more like a bug and a glitch.
But all I had to do was, if I was blocking, and when you're countering something, it goes into slow motion for about a second.
Oh, you were spamming the B button, so you were countering them, then you were throwing them. I was countering
and throwing instead of counter and instant kill.
That game has troubles with spamming the B button. If you are in the store and you press the B button to leave, if you press it twice, it'll
go back into the shop.
Straight back into the shop, which I had to go... I went in and out of it multiple times.
Convoys. Disappearing. Yes. Like,
you have to make a new convoy, which the game doesn't teach you at all.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you that if a convoy goes missing, you don't recover the cart or anything else. You literally had to get wood and everything else to...
And rebuild it.
Rebuild, and...
Which, so the game has a lot of neat ideas, which... The thing is, from 1 to 2, 2 did introduce a lot of really cool new ideas, but they felt like they were play-tested a lot, and these ideas that are there from the beginning to the end...
2 was
really
extremely polished. And then from 2 to Brotherhood, they didn't add too much. Brotherhood was pretty much the addition of all the extra assassins that you could train.
Which was a really well-built system.
And it improved on the ideas in 2 that were already built. Yeah. You know,
So it even took out some of the bad things, like the having to go to each bank to get your money out, but just creating an overhaul thing.
Yeah, like, it really polished off everything. Brotherhood was the first one, I think. Was it 2 or Brotherhood that was the first one to add fast travel systems?
I think it was Brotherhood, actually.
Yeah, but I mean,
I do want to say...
It was...
Okay.
It was good.
Yeah, it was. So, a lot of the ideas in this sound great at first, and are great at first, but they overstay their welcome really quickly. So, obviously the convoy is a really cool idea, but it's pointless because you can't even access your convoy unless you're in a shop or at your house. So, you can't access it through the menu, so it becomes pointless to even worry about managing it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of quicker ways to make money.
Yeah.
Hunt.
The fast travel system is what they've done is there's an underground series of interconnected tunnels that you have to, you find the first fast travel point.
Another thing that I didn't realize until chapter 10. But
yeah, so you go underground and then you have to find the tunnels and find the exit doors to unlock the fast travel. For one, you can't run underground.
No, the only way to run underground is to walk through every individual tunnel and along your way, light all the lanterns that are connected to the walls under the ground. Then you put your lantern down.
I couldn't run without my lantern down.
I ran without my lantern.
I did once, and then it must have bugged, and it didn't work again.
But if you get to points where there's no lantern, it is literally pitch black. Like, you cannot see anything on the screen except a very thin silhouette of Connor.
Which, for me anyways, I did fight a guy in the underground tunnels,
yeah.
And then my lantern ended up in a wall, and I couldn't pick it back up.
Well done.
And it was pitch black.
You
waste too much time down there. It moves way too slow, and you waste hours down there trying to unlock those fast travel points.
Glitches.
There's a ton of glitches. There's no point even pointing out them because you're going to run into glitches if you play this game.
Last week, but I mean, continuing through the game, I thought maybe it's just that start. They'll get better. I mean, we won't go into too much detail, obviously, but I've had a myriad of glitches throughout the entire game. Some game breaking, some not so much. I'll post a picture up of a pretty obvious glitch that I went through.
So. Yeah. Some of the liberation missions. So they give you, when you first start taking back the town from the Templars, they give you liberation missions, which lead to unlocking assassins. But the liberation missions are, they're broken down to, each area has three main ones that you have to do. And the first time you do it...
Okay, we'll say for existence... say for example... Okay, Templars are trying to kick a guy out of his house.
Yeah, so you show up...
You show up, you beat up the Templars, saves them from kicking him out of his house. Three of those. Now, see, my problem with it is I'd get the first liberation mission, maybe the second, but then the third wouldn't show up on my map. It wouldn't show up anywhere.
You have to make sure to have... Like, if you've got an inch... If that of Fog of War and it's under it, it will hide it. It did that to me. But there's some in the New York City area, which is the first time you do it. Yeah, okay. This is funny. And then the second time you do it, this is actually annoying. I don't want to do this again. The third time you do it, you're like, you know what? I just want to, it's done. Yeah. I don't want to do these anymore. Lockpicking is cool the first time you do it.
And
it is frustrating and annoying every single time
I found out. If you do the liberation missions you get a key, which means you won't have to do the lockpicking. Those who are running around trying to get money and couldn't be screwed with the liberation missions at the time, you already
By the point you get the key, I've already opened half the chest, and it's pointless. Door puzzles. Now, to unlock the underground areas, you need to do a door puzzle. There's two kinds of puzzles. There's one where there's three latches that you use the right stick to move the bottom two, the left stick to move the top two. Which is pretty much, I just random them.
You just spam the left and right stick until they align.
The other one is you got to read a little bit of text, and it gives you a clue, and then you line up some objects. But you know what? Like I said, this is kind of cool the first time. The second time, it's like, this is dumb. I don't want to do this. And then suddenly you have to do it 5 to 10 times.
And it's pointless. It's really pointless.
Climbing puzzles. Now, climbing puzzles for me, they're just... any of the linear areas. So any of the time that's, okay, I have to climb from A to B and I have a set path. The great thing about Assassin's Creed's game is they're open world and you can run and jump wherever you want. And then suddenly they're like, you know what? In this point, you can run and then you can jump and then you got to go across and you got to jump. It's pointless. It just slows down the action. And it's like, well, I'm going to get from A to B anyways. So why bother? So I just think they're pointless and crap. Almanac pages, the first few times you chase them, it's okay. And then you realize how buggy and glitchy it is because the parkour is kind of dumb. Because they're floating pages on roof. And then you've got to run up to them, chase them, and get to them. But when the almanac page goes forward, and then for some reason that Connor really wants to jump into this tree that's 4 meters over to the left, and then by the time you've done that, you've got no chance of recovering to get the almanac page. You have to run away, come back, do it again. Run away, come back to it again.
And the thing with the almanac pages is every time you go to them, depending on which direction you come at them from, they will move along a different path. Yeah. So it's quite...
And what they unlock is kind of pointless. Yeah, and really a lot of the unlocks are really pointless.
A lot of them are just little trinkets inside your house, which is you know.
Which you don't
it's
even...
pointless. It's not The Sims.
You can't run in the house, so I didn't even check them out. So it's because you take too long to go to them. One of the last things I want to say is they introduced... obviously, in the last one, you had Leonardo da Vinci building you your weapons and your items and everything.
Yeah.
So what they have in this one is the crafting. Is you the more homestead missions you unlock, the more crafting you get. Which at first, like I said, seems to craft this new gun. And it's like, all right, you don't have this item, which you need to build this item. So go down to build that item. Okay, you need these items to build this item. So I'll go up and I make those items to build this item. To build this item, and you're spending 5 minutes just flicking through this really unintuitive menu.
Yeah, the menus are very, very
slow and unintuitive.
They're not set up well at all. Yeah, like for instance, like you'll need wood and sand to make this type of barrel. Okay, you'll need 3 barrels and something else
to make
that you needed
else.
To.
Yeah,
and it's tedious. It's pointless. The main reason you make any of these items is to send them on a convoy to another town to make money, which takes like 45 minutes in-game time most of the time to get any repercussions back.
Yeah.
And you get back $1,000, which you could have killed 3 hares around your house and got the money back straight away anyway. Like it's... But I mean, I guess that covers most of our cons. I mean...
I still really like the story
Pros
and where they
the
went.
Game, yep, story works.
Except, we're not going to say anything, but the way that the meta story ends is, it made me hate the game.
Yeah. I don't want to go into it because I'll honestly accidentally spoil it, but for those who are huge fans,
we'll just put it this way, that we're not looking forward to an Assassin's Creed 4.
No.
So, it's fun for a while. There's some really bad bugs and glitches.
Get yourself War and Peace because the credits roll for, I don't know, maybe 6 hours.
Oh, God, they roll for ages.
Longest credits in any movie
or game. I'm
pretty
sure that everyone that ever worked for Ubisoft worked on this game.
I'm pretty sure I was looking at my clock a lot while I was waiting for the credits. The credits roll for, I think it was anywhere between 16 and 17 minutes.
Shit, really?
Yeah.
I sat through that whole thing.
Yeah.
I was doing other stuff, but I didn't leave
the room. And there is stuff at the end, so you have to sit. So, you know, go and make dinner or, you know, go for a drive.
Yeah, so...
Because it's going to take a while.
And those were our thoughts on Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah. So wrap up. As I said earlier, I think it's... In my opinion, 60% bad, 40% good.
Which is just not enough to...
Yeah, and the multiplayer doesn't really hold it together enough to...
It's an like it was last time, it's an interesting idea, but unless you're really into that multiplayer, it's not something to hold it on.
Yeah. So
that's that.
But yeah, anyone's finished it or anything like that, no spoilers on our Facebook page, but if you want to put some comments in and...
Yeah,
tell us what you thought, then by all means.
Send us a message if you want, because my mate and his friend both really enjoyed the ending, which we did not like. I know.
That's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, fair enough. There are people out there that will like it, obviously.
Yeah.
But we didn't.
No. All right. Games-wise, I guess that's...
Pretty much it. Like, Halo 4 was the big game of this week, but neither of us played it. Neither of us really has any intention of.
Yeah, unfortunately. Sorry, Halo fans, but, you know.
I would like to play it, but I haven't actively played a Halo game since Halo 2, so.
Yeah.
It no longer is my thing. Halo 1, which I'll say, I bought it the day after I hired it. That's how much I loved Halo 1. Just, I have no more interest in Halo. Which, we're one day off playing Black Ops 2. Black Ops 2 comes out tonight at 12:01, so...
Black Ops 2, I mean, I've been a Call of Duty fan, not so big as to play it for months on end. Like, I'll give it a go and whatever
else.
I've been a bigger fan of the Treyarch rather than... Who's our other one that
Infinity
makes...
Ward. Yeah, well, that's where Infinity Ward is now is...
But Treyarch, obviously, they're the ones who do... They did World at War, they did
Black
the original
Ops.
Black Ops, and obviously
they did
Black Ops 2.
So they did 3, World at War, Black Ops, and Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
Infinity Ward, 1, 2, Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3. Modern Warfare 3 is made by an Infinity Ward that is not really an Infinity Ward.
I really didn't like Modern Warfare 3.
I didn't. I thought the multiplayer was okay and fun for a while. I didn't... The storyline, basically... They introduced in Modern Warfare 2 where your character dies. Something they kept carrying over. two or three missions into Modern Warfare 3, your character dies. That was the last I played as a single player.
Well, and for me, the Black Ops single player is my favorite single player out of any Call of Duty.
I never finished it. I will admit this, though. Sam Worthington has a killer Alaskan accent.
He does.
I'm Alaskan, mate. It's
hilarious.
It is. But Sam Worthington can't hold an accent to save his life. He also can't hold an accent while yelling.
Yeah. But, I mean, I honestly didn't think I'd want Black Ops 2. I had no desire to get the game. And then 3 months ago, they announced that Christopher Nolan, who, you know, obviously directed the Batman trilogy, I was come onto Black Ops 2 to help be a producer. They've got Trent Reznor to come in and do music. And, I mean, even though I'm a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, apart from that, the music, obviously,
I believe they also had before,
Social Network and Girls, he's a Dragon he's Tattoo. Like, those two things are enough to draw me into the game.
There was a writer involved. I can't remember his name. He did. He wrote Blade 1 and 2, wrote and directed Blade 3.
And they're all decent reasons to bring me back, and obviously because it's Treyarch, not Infinity War.
He also co-wrote Batman.
Oh, there you go.
God, I cannot remember his name. It starts with a D.
It'll kill me when I hear it because I'll freaking know it. But
who has not had as much success directing his own movies as he has writing movies?
So. Yeah.
So you know what? Black Ops is out tonight. Yeah. I'll probably pick up a copy tonight or tomorrow morning, and then we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, I'll give it a yell. I'll cover quickly any Pokemon fans out there. I've been a Pokemon fan since, 97 when we got them here. I died off a little, pretty much, because every new game introduced another 150, 200 Pokemon.
Last Pokemon was Pokemon Gold. That was it.
And it got to a point where it was getting really, really ridiculous. The formula hadn't changed, just the graphics. I really didn't have any big hopes for Black and White 2, obviously the first sequel games in the Pokemon franchise. Yeah,
that weeds me out, to be honest.
And every corner of this game has really, really surprised me. Walker, the biggest thing for me, and obviously if you've been a Pokemon fan, that would be surprising, is you walk into a new area, tap on the Pokedex on the touchscreen, and it gives you a list of all the Pokemon that are wild in that area and which ones you've caught and haven't caught. So,
how did it take them 10 games to decide that?
Exactly, and these are things that should have been staple, you know, two or three generations ago, and now are finally, like, things that are logical and that should have been in there for a long time are really in this game. But if you are a Pokemon fan and weren't sure about getting it or whatever else, you haven't been on board for a while, this is definitely a good place to start, or definitely a good place to re-pick up and get back into it, because it's classic Pokemon, but there's a lot of innovations in it now, and it is smooth, it's polished, it's what the Pokemon game should be.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm really, really impressed.
All right, so let's move on to some comics, everyone's favorite thing. I try to scour the internet for as much information on the news as I could. I'm not so good at finding comic news because I'm not all that into comics. No, I mean, I'm not that in-depth into comics. I mean, I love comics. I've been reading a ton of Ben Templesmith stuff. But we have a pretty big news story this week.
What do we got this week?
So Vertigo is cancelling Hellblazer. Hellblazer .cos. Is it semicolon? John Constantine? John Constantine. Shit.
Constantine, yeah.
Wait, what's he call himself in the movie?
Constantine.
So his name's John Constantine.
Okay.
The movie pretty much fucked up everything they possibly could. So Hellblazer, John Constantine, has been running since 1988. The series is as old as I am. It was as when Vertigo started in 93, it jumped across to that. It's going to end the end of this year with its issue number 300 and the end of the arc, Death and Cigarettes, written by Peter Milligan with art by Giuseppe... Oh, God.
Chemicoli,
yeah. And Stefano Landini. End in February, not the end of this year. And it'll mark the end of Constantine's decades at Vertigo. But it's not the end of Constantine. Constantine.
Hollywood ruining it for us.
Yeah. Constantine is currently running in DC's New 52's Justice League Dark, which is issue 13 like everything else. Which I really want to read because I love the idea of John Constantine, but I've never been able to jump to Hellblazer, just somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So.
So they're relaunching it next year under the new DC 52 as Constantine.
It might be, yeah, third wave of new 52 is February, so.
Yeah, so it will be written by Robert Vendetti, who's done Exo Manowar and Demon Knights, and it'll be drawn by Renato Guedes, who's done Wolverine, and of course it'll be the
John Constantine that follows over from Justice League Dark.
So,
and I guess another big comic news this month, Marvel have just sparked their Marvel Now campaign, which is pretty much along the lines of DC's New 52, where they've taken a lot of things back to their first issue. So everything, the only thing that really differs from DC's is DC's universes all started with a new continuity because of Flashpoint, which ended their old continuity prior to New 52. So everyone's story is new. They've created new backstories, created new things with keeping old fans there and also bringing new fans in. Marvel more so is just like, here's a bunch of new writers, a bunch of new illustrators. This is the story that we've had in the past. You're keeping that. It's just called Number One now.
It's kind of weird because Marvel does stuff occasionally, which they group everything. Sorry, God, I got to start again. So all of Marvel's kind of franchises all exist within the same universe, and they restart a lot of them all the time under a new universe slogan. So there's Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Wolverine, which they did a couple of years ago, yeah, which was a restart for people who want to get into those comics to read those comics, and that's what the Ultimate is. I think Ultimate Spider-Man is still running.
Yeah, one of them is. But there's also, I mean, you've got the Amazing Spider-Man, you've got the Amazing Spider-Men now, which is a black Spider-Man, but also Peter Parker is still there training the new Spider-Man. How he got his powers and continuity is—it's a bit odd. Look it up. It seemed interesting to me, but at the same time, it's so far through now that it's not something I want to pick up because I'd be really confused as to how it's happening. But I guess that's kind of why Marvel's done it. It worked for DC, worked really well, boosted the comics industry bigger than it's had in the last decade. So,
yeah, well, considering the fact that Marvel's been on top of DC for a while now.
Yeah, and DC kicked them in the butt for a few months because of the new 52, and they went, well, if it works for them, let's do it for us. So
I guess we'll have to see how it goes.
I mean, for those who aren't a Marvel fan, I'm not a big Marvel fan, but I do love some of the characters, so it's a good, you know, it's my, good to be able to pick up from issue one. It's given me incentive to actually really want to go and look at what they've restarted and really start getting into it. So.
For me, anyways, my single favorite comic book character is a Marvel character, Jamie Madrox, Multiple Man.
Yes.
Who is currently in his own ongoing series, X Factor, which is a sequel to Madrox, written by, I cannot remember his name, but he's the guy that originally created Multiple Man. So that you should check out. I've got some of that in my house. So.
And for those crazy ass Deadpool fans out there, Deadpool has started from issue one with his own issue one, not part of Uncanny X-Force or anything, so it should be interesting. And the writer that they've got with him is a lot different to the Deadpool writer they've had previously. I think he's taken a more, it's not a serious approach, it's still freaking hilarious, but it's not I don't know how to describe it, you know, it's not scary movie humor.
Yeah,
if you get what I mean. Yeah. Deadpool was going very scary movie, epic kind of movie.
Campy, yeah, over campy the top humor.
Whereas it's hilarious humor now. Like, it's a lot funnier. So I really enjoy the writing. I had a look at a few of the preview issues that they send out for free for Deadpool, and it's hilarious. So definitely check it out.
I do want to just quickly talk about one of the ones I read is currently Image, or IDW, I believe, is running a Ghostbusters ongoing comic at the moment. Let's see if I got the information in front of me.
IDW,
that's all the information I have in front of me. I forget what their issue up to is. There's two volumes out at the moment. It's really cool if you're a Ghostbusters fan. I mean, the entire time I read this, all I could think of is, I need to get a copy of these films. I need to rewatch the original Ghostbusters. The writing is really good. It's the characters are all there. It's really cool. The only issue I have with it is the art. Now, it's not bad art, but it's Saturday morning cartoon art.
The only thing I could really describe it to is Ben 10 style art.
Yeah, it's the Saturday morning cartoon. The annoying thing for me anyways is the Ultimate covers are done by Nick Runge, and his covers are pretty much his interpretations of all the characters, which I believe his Bill Murray is not anything like Bill Murray due to the fact that Bill Murray doesn't like his likeness in anything.
Yeah.
But you see his kind of stuff and being like, oh man, his art is really cool. This would be really cool. And then it's Saturday morning cartoon. So
yeah.
I'm still reading through it because it's just super interesting regardless. And I'll keep reading it as it comes out. But it's really cool for Ghostbusters fans. So that's pretty much all we got on comics anyways. News, comics, and trailers. So what we're going to do is we're going to just quickly talk about a few things that you guys should definitely check out. Before we finish up, which Troy has a lovely lady he wants to shout out to and talk about.
Yes, for those who aren't already a fan of her on Facebook, her name is The Nerdy Stripper. Fantastic woman, covered in all our Iron Man and other fantastic nerd tattoos in Australia at the moment, and enjoying our lovely land. She's in Tattoo Life magazine, if you end up picking up a copy of that. There's an expose in there on her about her performing at the London Tattoo Convention, which is one of the biggest tattoo conventions in the world, and she got to perform over there just last month. She performed at the Melbourne Tattoo Show, Melbourne International Tattoo Convention, just a few weeks ago. So go over and check out her page, give it a like. She's fantastic.
You know, something half nerdy, half dripper. I mean,
it's fantastic. She enjoys what she does, and she does it well, so good on her.
I've currently been watching a web series on YouTube hosted by Will Wheaton. It's called Tabletop. I think it's on the YouTube channel Geek and Sundry, which is a Felicia Day theme. They have a lot of her stuff up there.
I love Felicia Day.
If you don't know
who she is, shame on you.
She actually guest stars in a few episodes. It's really cool. Will Wheaton invites a bunch of guests around that are guests from kind of geeky sort of stuff, from the YouTube, from the internet kind of things, and they play a different card game or board game each week, which I won't lie to you, I've managed to purchase a bunch of them since watching them, and it's also really funny and really cool. So you should check that out. Also, introducing Troy to the joy of violin playing.
Check her out. Her name is Lindsay Sterling. She got popular in the nerd world, I guess, from doing a Skyrim theme on YouTube. She plays a violin. She dances while she plays violin.
I know, it's just...
It's... I can't even describe it. It's the sexiest enchanting dancing I have ever seen while playing a violin. And violin's not an easy thing to play while you're moving around like she does. And the film clip that I actually saw first was her doing a song in a graveyard.
Moon Trance is the name of the song.
Moon Trance, yeah. And
we'll definitely post that one.
Very Thriller-esque, like Michael Jackson Thriller-esque. Zombies dancing, graveyard, but cool, like, and out there, alternative violin music.
The music is really cool. Like,
just, yeah,
I definitely
want
to try to pick up her album, because it's just a treat to listen to.
Yeah, check it out. Give us a, you know, give us a shout of what you think about it, but fantastic, fantastic stuff.
And lastly, if you happen to be a geek and love this podcast and live anywhere in or around the Gold Coast, we've got a Facebook book.
Facebook group that we are part of, that was started by a friend of ours, Jax, and it's called Gold Coast Geeks. Check it out. Just a cool little hangout spot for us to talk about anything geek related. Yeah, definitely go over and give it a shout out.
That's pretty much mostly all we have for today, for this week. What is going to happen is... I don't even know why I just said that. Okay, what am I saying? Later on tonight, me and Troy are going to go play the Wii U. I'll let Troy talk about this since he's the reason we're going there.
This morning, as of this week, Nintendo are going around Australia doing their usual tours that they do when they release new consoles or doing some big promos. This week, all week, Monday to Friday, they are set up at Pacific Fair, just down past Target, set up so people can be hands-on with the Wii U. From the email I received, 9:30 this morning was, you know, their first Gold Coast one, so we got there, of course, 8 o'clock in the morning. waiting around, hung around a bit outside the little area where they're setting up the Wii U just to talk to the rep, see what was going on. The head rep working there this morning actually came over after seeing the Mario and Luigi tattoos on my leg and was pretty impressed. Said they were running behind schedule, as Nintendo does on a regular occasion. And he said, look, we're not set up till 12. You're more than welcome to come back then. If you've got more stuff to do, then come back tonight and, you know, I'll remember you guys. We've got a VIP party going on for kind of special guests where we're having drinks, food, and previewing the Wii U for some bigger people. You're more than welcome to come in. So,
yeah, luckily, so we're going to go check out the Wii U. Yeah. And we'll let you guys know how it goes. It'll be really cool to see it. Have a go.
Yeah, our podcast hopefully will be next Monday.
If our schedules permit, which is funny saying, considering I work 2 days a week at the moment and Troy has no job yet.
Yet somehow we managed to be
unavailable the days we need to be available.
Yeah, so, but definitely coming up very soon, we'll give you our, you know, comments on a lot of the new movies and trailers coming out, as well as obviously hands-on information with the Wii U, our thoughts and, you know.
Yeah, feelings, yeah. Stuff like that.
So it should be very interesting, me being the biggest Nintendo fanboy on the planet.
And me being a little bit skeptical about the new Wii U, it's a gimmicky controller.
Little bit's an understatement.
Okay, guys, as always, you can find us at facebook.com/popcultureandwhiskey. You can find us on Twitter at TUSPCAW, or you can find me on Twitter at Genkaku, GENKKAKU. Our email is popcultureandwhiskey@gmail.com. Our podcast is currently hosted at Podomatic, and you can find that at www.popcultureandwhiskey.podomatic.com. I'm Reese.
And I'm Troy.
Please tell us your thoughts, questions, anything else. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.